Welcome to Last Letters Podcast, a show which asks each guest a simple question. If tomorrow was your final day on Earth, what would your last letter be? It began as a self-reflective question from the show's host, Jeremy Locke. A world traveler and retired Air Force photojournalist, Jeremy is 7-time Military Photographer of the Year and a Bronze Star recipient who has always wondered about his portraits. What would this person's advice to the world be?
Welcome to Last Letters. I'm your host, Jeremy Locke. Joining us today is UFC fighter Matt Hughes. Over his career, he's won 9 titles. Matt was also hit by a train about 5 years ago. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing good. So if I start on my mortgage or something, sometimes they just don't come out as clean as they used to. With the train wreck, I had the worst brain injury possible, so I've never been normal, but I'm not as normal as I used to be.
You still seem pretty normal to me.
Now, I will tell you this. Don't open the door and expect me not to go in it. So when you give me that leeway, I'm going to talk bad about you, too.
Great. So hit by a train. What happened?
It was in a country crossing, and there was a steep incline to go over the tracks. In the country, there's no cross arms or lights or anything. It's just, I think there was a yield sign about 30 yards back, but nothing really just showed. And it's at an angle when you turn to the right and look down the tracks, all you see is the passenger headrest. So it's a terrible angle for looking for a train.
So there's a blind spot for you.
It was. And the person I was booed to talking to someone, and the person I was talking to said they never heard a horn. So I don't think the train sounded its horn.
You had no idea. Do you remember the impact?
No, they say with the brain injury, most people forget the whole day. So I don't know what I was doing. But one thing I know now is because the people I was working for told me what I was doing. I was helping a neighbor do some farming. So I had a tank full of diesel fuel in the back of the truck.
Did it explode?
Diesel fuel won't explode. So the driver of the train said he hates the smell of diesel now because it went all over him.
So you've met the driver of the train?
I have.
What did that conversation go like?
I tried to be nice and just be calm, but he said when he hit the truck I was in, he gives me the dimensions. Took him like 100 train cars to get stopped, but when he stopped, he ran all the way back to my truck to see if I was okay. And he said when I got to my truck, he pushed me back because I was leaning against the steering wheel. He said when he pushed me back, I gasped in air. So I just wonder how long I was sitting there not breathing or not breathing much at all. So if I was propped back, I think I wouldn't have such a serious brain injury.
It was you collapsed onto the steering wheel, losing oxygen, that you think that caused the brain injury.
I had a brain shear, so the train hit me so hard, it just jarred my brain so much it broke the axons. A funny story is, a helicopter come got me and took me to a hospital. The nurse in my phone, I've got her as the nurses saved my life. And when she got there, they're the boss. She looked at me and looked at the situation. She said, put a neck brace on him before he comes out of the truck because the EMTs were just going to pull me out. But she said, no, put a neck brace on him. And she said, the pilot of the helicopter is very calm and never gets excited. She had me in the helicopter. He turned around and saw me and recognized who it was. He said, drag that guy now. She said she dragged me because he was worried I'd wake up and kind of go ballistic.
Yeah, that's like, I don't want an angry Matt Hughes on.
Yeah.
What did the train driver feel when he was talking to you? Did he feel sad? What was his feelings during your talk?
I really don't know because there's a lawsuit now, so we don't talk anymore because he says, his lawyer says we can't talk, so we don't talk anymore. So I really don't know what he thinks. The person I was on the phone with said there's no horn, so I think he probably screwed up. And he said the truck I was in stopped at the tracks, and then I just kept going. So I think I stopped. I looked and just saw no train in the passenger headrest and kept going. So he said I stopped and then kept going. So that's the only thing that comes to me is I stopped. I didn't see a train and kept going.
Did it hit you in the front of the truck or in the back?
It hit me in the back bed right behind the back passenger seat.
any other injuries that were sustained, or was it mostly traumatic brain?
Just my poor brain. And my poor brain has been beat on its whole life. But I did go to Columbia. I do have a brain.
So no broken bones, no cuts really, no nothing. So what did they do for you when you were in the hospital?
Well, they had me in a coma for 19 days. So I guess just wanted my body to heal itself. I think they just tried to relax my brain and get it. I don't know if it's swelled or what, but I don't think they did much. It's just
kind of let it heal and rest. What do you look back and wonder from that day?
Well, before that day, I had so much balance. Now, I'm not falling down, but smart doctors have said there's no reason for me to even stand up straight without falling down. They say that my balance should be off so much, but I've always had such good balance with being an athlete. My shirt says Rebirth on it. I like this shirt because I was born again as a Christian 13 years ago, but I was born again 5 years ago after the train.
How did you rebirth after the train?
They had to teach me everything. They had to teach me how to walk again. I've been to so many speech therapists, and my speech still isn't perfect, but I had to learn everything again.
Okay, so you're this, you know, UFC fighter, this athlete. What is having a traumatic brain injury? What has that experience been like?
Well, I don't wish on anyone. Even the person I hate the most, I wouldn't want anyone. It's quite sad. The road I've been on the last 5 years, so I don't want anyone to have to be on that.
What do you think the biggest struggle is?
Well, I have people I help. I love being busy, but I have a guy that does siding and gutters, and he won't let me climb high on a ladder because he's afraid I'll fall off with my balance being so bad. So that's probably it. Just people don't trust me enough to work like I'm used to.
With your speech impairment, are you thinking like you know exactly what you're saying, but it's just harder to come out?
Correct.
Is that frustrating?
It is, but if they don't understand me or don't want to pay attention to me, I don't want to talk to them anyway.
That's a great way of looking at it. Thank God you're still talking to me then.
Can I tell people a little about us?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell them about last night.
Well, last night, actually, we went out to dinner last night. I had a blast. I ate at our local seafood shop, TJ's. And I went to the bathroom. I was supposed to pick up the bill. And good old Matt swoops in when I'm in the bathroom and picks up the bill. But the beautiful thing.
So when he went to the bathroom, that was, I knew that was my chance. So I went back to the waitress and said, here's the credit card. You're wearing this card. And just give me the bill. That way he didn't have a chance to give his card.
Yeah, I was pretty pissed. You saw me. I was like, really? And then you have to one-up me, right? Then you have to one-up me and go to the waitress. So she's been waiting on us for 2 years, my wife and I. And you sit there and go, okay, you write in what you think you should get the tip for. And her eyes just lit up.
And she said, no. Yeah, I said, I need to talk to your manager then. So the manager comes over and he says, do whatever he says.
And when she ended up tipping herself?
I think the bill was it $250?
I think it was like $350.
$350, and she tipped herself 100%. So she put...
There was a little egging going on about on the table, like, girl, put in 100%, put in 100%. So now, because of you, Matt, I can't go back to my local seafood TJ's.
The funny thing is, this jackass I'm looking at actually thought he was going to get the bill.
I did. So what's amazing about that story is I learned something about you. You got a huge heart. And here, you know, I've seen the UFC fights and you're just this big, bad kind of athlete. Man, that heart, like you impacted somebody that she is going to talk about that moment the rest of her life.
And my biggest thing I love doing is I love helping people. So if I see someone drop something, I love being able to be there and pick it up. Or if I see a homeless guy by a restaurant, I say, sir, what kind of sandwich would you like? So I just try and be, when I pray before my food, I will say, God, please let everybody I take, let me act more like Jesus. So I look at everything I do as like, what would Jesus do?
Is that part of your rebirth after the train wreck? Or
I was kind of like that before, but nothing like now.
It was just huge. And I met you a couple weeks ago initially at a veterans event. And here you are coming down making, I don't want to say appearances. They're not really appearances. You're just down there with good friends and connecting with the military.
And I've always been a supporter of the military because if I was a fighter, I would have traveled that route. But the military was our biggest fans. And so many military come up and say, when I was deployed to who knows where, I was always watching your fight. So I got to thank those guys for always supporting me. So I would support them back.
That's what I do. I'm kind of a voyeur as a photographer, and I'm watching body language and studying people as I photograph them. Going back to this huge heart that you have, the other day we were out at the Adaptive Training Foundation. That's David Vibaro. He's been on our podcast as well. He has this gym, and you were there, and you brought one of your belts. And what struck me watching you is you passing around this belt, like letting them touch, feel, hold. And I've only witnessed that one other time, and that was with a Medal of Honor recipient. And we were on a plane going to on a trip, and he literally took off his medal and let the whole plane touch and play with it. And to see people's faces light up and go, oh my God, because that's something that you cherish. I mean, whether you received it or earned it, that's a part of you. And here you are giving up one of your babies to let people touch and play and experience it. And it just made such a big impact on me.
To me, it's not a big deal because I'm not saying this arrogantly, but damn, I've got nine of them. I can spare one. I don't mean to cuss, but just me being honest.
I love that about you. Where do you think your big heart comes from?
I'm a lot like my mom. I've got a twin brother. He's a lot like my dad, but I'm a lot like my mom.
Do you see the impact that your big heart gives? Because like last night at that restaurant, that waitress, not only did it affect that waitress, but she was a single mom, I believe, and had a kid, talked about how like, oh my God, this is going to help out our family so much.
I just nice because I want to be nice. I don't do it for any gain anywhere. My thing is when I'm nice to people, I'll reap my benefits in heaven.
Are you real religious?
I am.
Where did that stem from?
I became a Christian about 13 years ago, but since the train accident, we've all got angels that watch us, but God's angel that day really worked with keeping me alive.
Was there a point in your life, especially after the train wreck, where you were angry at God?
I wouldn't say angry. I just didn't understand. I didn't know why he had the train hit me. Then I kind of thought, well, maybe he had the train hit me so I can help people that have had disease or accidents. So I'm kind of on the road looking at helping people with brain injury or a sickness.
What led you to become a Christian?
I was on a mission trip, and there was a painting on the wall, and it's called Who Cares? And there's people all over on a dock, and then there's water and boats, and people in the boats and people in the water. And some are barely above water. It captivated me looking at that painting. So the last day of the mission trip, we all went up on a mountain, and we're supposed to tell us where we are in the picture. And in the corner, there's a guy lifting weights, and everyone thought that was me. And when it come time for me, I said, I'm not that guy. I'm in the water, and you can't even see me because I'm not a Christian yet. Yeah, so my theory was the people in the water that are drowning, those are non-believers, and the people up on the dock living their lives in their shape, they're Christians. So I said, you can't even see me. I'm so deep in the water.
And then what led you or what wanted you to come out of that water?
I said a prayer to God by myself, and I think El Paso was a couple miles away. We're on a mountain.
What country were you in?
At the exact moment, we was in this El Paso getting ready to fly home, but the orphanage was in Mexico. And after I said my prayer to God, I said a serious prayer. I felt like El Paso, like I said, was about 2 miles away, and I felt like I could get there in two or three steps. Just felt so energized. So that was proof to me there is a God and this is real.
So you have this big heart, and you said that you got it from your mother. Who was your mother growing up?
My dad favored my brother, so my dad always had my brother, and they would be in the living room watching TV. I was in the kitchen helping mom clean or maybe doing my homework. When I was a kid, she was one of my best friends.
I love hearing that. You're a twin, so you have a twin brother. And he was kind of daddy's boy, and you're kind of mama's boy.
Very true, but we all wanted to be with dad, and I was stuck with mom because she's just a better person.
What do you think your mom taught you in life?
Probably one of the most important for my career was she taught me my work ethic.
And how does she do that?
She didn't tell me. She led by example.
That's amazing. What did you think you gained from your dad?
Well, I don't drink coffee. I'd say to drink coffee.
Yeah, I know. I learned that from you this morning. You've never drank coffee.
I've had a couple of sips, but I just don't find it tasty at all.
Do you drink alcohol?
No, I never really drank at all because I was an athlete. But since my brain accident, my doctor said alcohol kills brain cells. And so I'm trying to keep all I have.
So I guess I'm killing brain cells over here. Might have lost a few last night. That's why I didn't get the check.
Would you sit there and drink makes me feel good? Because I'm getting smarter than you.
So what was Matt like growing up? Tell me about your childhood. Where did you grow up?
In Hillsboro, Illinois, a small town, very small farm, probably 1,200 acre farm. We lived on the edge of a town, but was probably 5 miles from town with the roads, 3 miles if you walk in a straight line. But I was happy I grew up the way I did because when I wrestled or fought, I never told a coach, no, you should do what you told. I always did whatever they said and maybe a little bit more.
Was wrestling something that you started at an early age or was it later in life?
I was a freshman in high school when I started.
Get out of here, really?
I guess I was good because when I was a freshman, I went to state and most freshmen don't go to state when they're a freshman. My sophomore year, I was undefeated to state. I lost twice. Those were my last two losses in high school. Then my junior year, I was undefeated. My senior year, I was undefeated.
I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I too was a wrestler. I'm not saying that to challenge you. I'm not challenging you one bit. But
let's hear your credentials.
They're horrible. So I too, I was never undefeated, but I too started freshman. You know, I played soccer and baseball and things like that. But what I loved about wrestling was there's not five other guys, nine other guys, whatever. It is one-on-one. And it just taught me the power of sport and the power of competition. It's just you. You have no one to blame. I did freshman year. 152, 160 is kind of what my range was. Yeah, I won and lost some. Let's just say that.
That's a good way to say it. That might be how losers talk about wrestling.
God damn it. Hey, you kind of got me there.
As a freshman, did you go to state?
No. Mike, okay, so my claim to fame, look, I'm trying to justify to you, Matt Hughes. I'm trying to justify to Matt Hughes. So my claim to fame was I was a mediocre wrestler. I did win, and I did lose, but there was a state guy. It was like a qualifying match, and he was the number one guy. He's the guy that comes in, take you down, let you back up, take you down. It was just frustrating. And I actually got into some kind of move, twisted or fell, and kind of almost knocked him out and had him to where I was pinning him, but he was out. And my coach rushed in and said, hey, wait, stop. He's the better man. Look, he's the better man that should be going to state. I just did something that was kind of crazy, had a luck chance, but that's kind of my wrestling story. not impressive.
So tell me how you shine in the story.
I don't shine in the story. I'm pretty embarrassed that I even told you.
Can I give you some advice?
Yes, absolutely.
Just shut up about wrestling because you're losing this battle kind of bad.
Point taken.
I like to keep quiet because people can think I'm stupid. I just don't want to open my mouth and remove all doubt. So yeah.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks. Point taken again. So from wrestling, then where did you go?
I was two-time state champion in high school. Then I went to college, and I was All-American every year. And then I was still wanting to compete. I was coaching college wrestling, and then I wanted to compete. So I took fighting up just as a hobby. My first fight was in All Crows Catholic School in Chicago, and my paycheck was $100. I thought it was big time.
You thought you were big
then time. A year later, I went back. I fought again. This time, they doubled it. It was $200.
So what college did you wrestle at?
Eastern Illinois.
So after that, then you go coaching, but also want to stay competitive. So you start doing this. What is the transition like from actually wrestling to now your mixed martial art where you're fighting, punching? And
it's a big transition because when you fight, you have to be comfortable on your back. And wrestling, as you know, you never want to expose your back. That's a good place to be in a fight because you don't want someone to have your back or be able to punch you. So on your back, you can actually defend yourself.
What are some of the new things that you had to learn going from wrestling?
Striking was big for me in submissions, but submissions were kind of easy because I was always used to controlling people.
Were you like a fighter when you were a kid?
Me and Mark fought a lot.
Really? Tell me about one of your fights.
Well, we would drive each other to school as a junior or senior. We rode together as a junior for sure. And the driver was the loser because he had to drive and the passenger could just punch on him however he wanted. So that happened about every time we're in a car.
So with striking, what are things to learn about striking?
For me, it was the footwork and just throwing straight punches. And the whole thing was new for me because I never tried to learn how to punch. You just throw a punch by throwing your arm out.
How did you get discovered? Was it from those two early fights?
I had two fights, and the ref for the first fight was a guy named Pat Miletich, and he was my coach. He's the first welterweight world champion the UFC's ever had. He ref my first fight. I had the guy down. I was chucking him and punching him at the same time, and the guy I was doing that to said, "That's not legal." Pat looked at him and said, "Yes, it is." So after I beat him, Pat said, "You should come to my gym." So I went to his gym, and Pat's the one that made me the world champion I became.
What was it that he had that you looked up to or learned from?
Well, he had the belt, so I knew he was good, but he just had a way of teaching me I could respect and learn. He had a bunch of guys there, so it was actually a mecca of guys that were there, and we all taught each other.
Take me through your first big bout. Like, you know you're big time. Like, take me through the energy, the feeling, the crowd.
My first UFC fight was UFC 22. It's amazing where I was at to start with. It was in Louisiana. I flew in, and I was a pound and a half over. So I weigh in, and Big John says, "You're a pound and a half over." So I go out and run as far as I can down a road and turn around and try and run back. But I walked in and got on the scale. I lost the weight, but that's one thing I like. I never miss a weigh-in.
I hated that, having to burn those little pounds if you were a little over.
I got paid to make weight, so I have to, or I don't get paid.
All right, so now you're on the scale. You've made weight. Take me through this.
I fought a guy named Val Ignatov, and he's an ankle specialist. I'm a wrestler, so typically he never see my ankles because I'm going to take him down, and that keeps my ankles safe. He's going to have to take me down to get my ankles, and that's not going to happen. So I'm not worried at all. This ankle specialist is never going to see my ankles.
Were you nervous, though, a little bit, like butterflies?
I was, but I say being a little nervous is good for you. I can't think of a fight I was a little nervous. When I fought one time in Japan, there's no weight classes. So I go and match me up with someone. I remember I was fighting a guy named Kanahara.
Kanahara.
Before the fight, I was reading a Dan Gable book. So I'm supposed to be warming up, but I'm sitting there reading my book. I'm sure he's like, "Why is this guy getting warmed up?" But those Japanese people might be technical, but they have no power. So my power was going to outweigh his technique big time. Yeah, yes, I won.
When did you win your first belt?
November of 2001. And it was Carlos Newton.
It has been said that speed kills. It is also true that power can be devastating. UFC welterweight champion Carlos Newton and top-ranked contender Matt Hughes are a contradiction in styles, where Newton relies on superior mental preparation, ring savvy, and a wide array of weapons. Matt Hughes' assets lie in his physical strength, overpowering takedowns, and relentless ground-and-pound assaults. And for these two great athletes, the foundation for their UFC success can be found in their lifelong dedication to their respective disciplines.
Carlos had just beat Pat Miletich, my coach.
Perhaps the person with the best perspective on this fight is the person Newton beat to win the belt, who also happens to be Matt Hughes' corner man and trainer, UFC legend Pat Miletich.
The thing that makes Matt so dangerous is he can control where the fight is going to be. If he wants the fight to stay up on the feet, he can do that because he can stuff takedowns so well. If he wants to go to the ground, he can do that almost at will because he can take almost anybody down at will.
He ran the gym, so me looking for a workout partner, I just had to go to the gym because they're waiting on me. And we all won the title to come back to the gym.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a winner by knockout at 1:27 of round two for the winner and new UFC welterweight champion of the world, Matt Hughes.
Tell me what it's like to raise that belt.
You know this, I don't like wearing it or even having it because I'm not the current champion, so whoever the champ is, they get to be the champ. I'm just some old guy that had won him before.
Yeah, but you were good. You won 9 of them.
There's another guy that has 9 as well. GSP has 9 too.
Is 9 the highest, or are there other guys?
No one's ever won 10.
Get out of here. I didn't know that. I know you're humble. Matt, I know you like to sit there and say, you're not the current champ. 100% agree. I get that. What does that mean to you, having 9 titles? And people look up to you.
I tell you this, when I die, I don't want anything about UFC on my gravestone. I just want to be Matt Hughes, the guy that liked helping people and loved his kids. I don't need UFC on there. And humble people can't say they're humble. So I can't put anything about being humble on there.
Well, that's not for you to decide. It's for other people to watch your actions. It's other people to call you that. And I definitely see that in you. You have kids?
Can I be playful for a second?
This is your podcast. You can do whatever you want.
I probably got more than I know of. So I got 3 that I know of.
3 that you know of. What are their names?
Kaylin is my youngest girl. Hannah is my second youngest girl, 12 and 15. And then I got a boy, 21. His name's Brandon.
Are you married?
I'm going through a divorce right now. But girls out there listening to this, I've got a girlfriend, so don't look me up on Facebook.
You heard that, ladies.
And I've got this cute girl that's an actor, so I'm going to talk to her too. So she's doing a thing right now, so hope she
comes. I know you're not talking about my wife. Get out of here.
I guess I'm caught. When you bring security, make sure you bring enough of them.
See, now I'm sizing you up right now. I'm like, really? You talking about my beautiful wife? She is awesome, though.
I'm thinking she's blind. How could she go from looking in the mirror to looking at your ugly ass? Just as a match.
Oh, my God. Not only would I lose a fight with Matt, but I'm also getting ribbed by Matt, too. So where do your kids live now?
My 2 girls live in Illinois, but people don't hold that against me. Texas is God's country, so with my new wife, we'll probably stay here.
You like the house you're in?
Actually, I do have a few changes, but that's okay. It won't cost you much.
So what does it mean being a dad to your 3 children?
It's absolutely great. And the parents that don't know exactly what I'm talking about, but my son wants to be a fighter. So if that's what he wants to do, that's fine. But I hope he's good because I don't want to see him walk in there and take a beating. With my girls, when they bring that first ball home, I'm going to take them to my gun room so they know I can hurt them from a long ways away. I don't need to be next to them, just within maybe 2 miles.
You are an avid gun collector, huh?
I got a lot. I see them as an investment.
With your son taking up fighting, is it something that you're able to sit there and bond and grow with and help him?
I do, because I've got a lot of knowledge in there, so I try to give it out as best I can.
What about your girls, if they wanted to get into fighting? What's that face? You're giving me a face.
I don't like to see a girl get hit, even if it's by another girl, so I don't want to see my girls get hit. I don't know how I'd act.
How is it being a dad of girls? And the reason why I'm asking is I think that's one thing I miss. I have two boys. You know, everybody talks about those daddy girls, and it's like kind of miss like having dad's little girl.
Well, boys are so easy because you can say anything to them. You can have any facial expression you want with a boy. But a little girl, if you look at them the wrong way, they'll go cry. So I have to watch what I say in my facial expressions with a girl. Just so emotional.
How emotional was it for your family when they learned that you were hit by the train?
I don't know, because I was in a coma 19 days, but they were on a little trip, so they were probably 5 or 6 hours from the hometown. But tell you a story. I had such a brain injury. I had a nurse who would take me in a wheelchair out to eat a lot. I think it was the second or third time she's pushed me in a wheelchair. I couldn't talk, but I could slap my shoulder. And when I slapped my shoulder, she could give me her phone and I could text them. But I just couldn't talk. So I text, "Who are you and why do you keep taking me out to eat?" She stopped the wheelchair. She come in front of me. I could hear fine, but I couldn't talk. She stopped the wheelchair and got in front of me and said, "I'm your wife." I tap my shoulder again and type, "Let me see your ID." So then she showed me her ID and I believe her, but I didn't recognize my wife or even know I was married. That's how bad my brain got messed up.
Is that kind of what led to your injury, the downfall and not knowing her?
Yes, but she thought I was going to be like a vegetable and she didn't want to take care of me.
What does it mean for you to, you know, I'm going to put it in your words, not be that vegetable? I mean, you've had to struggle. Let's call this your 10th title, right? Seriously, thinking that you're going to be a vegetable to look at you now.
I'm human, so it kind of takes me off. And the Bible says, for better or worse. And when I got worse, she abandoned me, but it's kind of sad. And I don't think the listeners want to be sad. Let's change the topic. I don't want to be sad either.
How was your family, like your daughters and your son, in your recovery?
I didn't see them much because my wife wouldn't let people see me because she kept me on lockdown. So she wouldn't give updates or anything because she's just trying to be very private about it. And I don't like that because I had so many people praying for me that they would like to see little updates or this and that, but she just wanted to keep everyone silent.
One piece of advice that you could give listeners or somebody who's got traumatic brain injury, like what is the biggest thing that you could give them?
Keep working and have a positive outlook, because most people with a brain injury or in a wreck are in a team. So if you come in positive, that's very contagious. So other people are positive too. Don't matter what's wrong with you, God convicts it. I'm proof of that. So just praise God and ask him for relief. Or I always ask for God, what road do you want me to walk down now? And so he guides me in every step. Know there's a God and God can help you no matter what.
Tell me about this positivity in your life, because you are a very positive person. What does positivity do to you?
I guess I've always been positive, so I don't say it like maybe you do, so maybe you should answer that.
I see somebody who walks around and it has that heart that wants to give back. I'll be the one to say it's watching you hand over your belt. It's you with the waitress. It's all these things that show that you have that big heart and are humble. And then you just said, I don't want to be known as a UFC fighter. I want to be known as dad.
I thank all my fans out there because their pay-per-view money somehow it went in my pocket. So I owe each and every one of them. So when someone walks up and wants a picture or an autograph, it's instantaneous because I owe those people really everything because those people let me retire at age, I think I was 39.
How old are you now?
Next question. I played the fifth. I'm 48, but I feel like 60 because I've been pretty rough on my body.
Paint me a picture of like the most memorable fight that you fought.
What took come to mind? Hoist Gracie, because I love that everyone thought I was going to lose.
You know, UFC fans, the story is well documented. A man named Elio Gracie, he basically created a system to allow the little man to survive in a fight against the big man. Elio Gracie is here in attendance tonight. His son, Hoist Gracie, brought that system into the octagon. Soon afterwards, he became a legend and a UFC Hall of Famer. Matt Hughes tonight wants to tell Hoist Gracie that he respects Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, but times have changed. Matt Hughes tonight wants to send a message to all that the game has changed and Hoist's time is now in the past.
If you go back and watch tape, everyone live was going to think he's going to school me.
Hoist Gracie, Joe talked about it, pride. Pride not only for himself, pride for his family, pride for everything he is. That's a pretty strong motivator.
Absolutely. Hoist Gracie's putting the Gracie mystique on the line in this fight and stepping up now years later since he defeated all those big guys in the open division and going against probably the pound for the pound, the strongest guy in this sport.
Hey, let's bring Joe back in real quickly to talk about that because Hoist Gracie says, all right, Matt, I make a mistake, you try to pounce. But if Matt Hughes makes a mistake, kid you not, Hoist Gracie can finish this fight.
For sure. I mean, Hoist Gracie is a brilliant submission specialist. He's fought guys much, much larger than him in the past. Recently submitted Akebono in Japan, who's over 400 pounds. So for sure, if Matt Hughes makes a mistake, Hoist Gracie can capitalize.
And actually, that was the easiest fight I ever had in the octagon. I was just too athletic and too strong for him. It was a catchweight at 175. This is one time I fought when I was champion that I didn't get to put on my defense list because it wasn't for a belt. So I get to gain 5 pounds. So I gained 5 pounds of pure muscle. So that old man wasn't going to do anything to me. I got him in a straight armbar with my hands and he wasn't going to tap. I know that. So I rolled him over and just started punching the back of his head. They put so much tape on your hands and gloves. I could feel his head go through all that on my hands. So I know I was hitting him hard. So he tapped out.
Hoist is all about survival, though, guys. This is a man who's fought for hours and hours in jiu-jitsu competition.
This has got to be discouraging to him no matter what. He's getting dominated on the ground here. Taking some serious punches, and he's in danger. Big John McCarthy stopping this fight.
Could this be over here? Can't Hoist the benefit.
Wow, that's it.
It's all over. Matt Hughes has defeated Hoist Gracie.
Wow. Complete and total domination.
The other fight would be Mark Sakurai, and he's supposed to be Michael Jordan from Japan. Those Japanese people might have technique, but they got no power. I made him a rag doll for 4.5 minutes. I played with that cat.
You just played with him? Did you know that you had him? Is that why you played? Were you comfortable enough to play?
I was in the group and he couldn't touch me. I was kind of playing with Hoist.
Get out of here. I remember the Gracie family and they were all grapplers, right? And they'd put on the move to make you tap out quick.
Not today. So I fought two Gracies. I fought Hoist Gracie and Henzo. Henzo, I thought, was the more deadly Gracie. So I stood with him and just kicked his leg out.
What's your mindset going into these? Like, are you real enemies? Do you dislike these people? Or could you, if you were a drinker, go out and have a beer with them right afterwards?
I could, like Frank Trigg, I won't take him out for a drink because he was such a cheap fighter and I kicked his ass twice. Can I say ass on air?
I think you just did. Did you kick his ass or kick his butt?
Which is more violent?
Ass.
I kicked his ass.
Have you ever had to stand toe-to-toe with a friend?
Not at all. If there were a friend, are a good acquaintance. I just say no to the fight, but they knew my circle never asked me to fight one, but they knew I'd say no.
Give me an honest answer on this. Take me through a time you were like, oh shit, I'm scared. This guy's got me.
Well, my last two losses, I got knocked out. So when you get knocked out, you don't know what's happening before it happens. But I fought GSP second and third time. The first time I beat him, but the second and third time, he was so athletic. I knew it was going to be tough, but he put me in positions that no one ever did, maybe except for practice. When I fought GSP, I knew it was going to be tough.
How do you prepare for that? How do you train for that after? So you lose a fight. What goes through your mind to get you back into the game again?
After I'm pissed at myself for losing, I'm such a competitor. If we play a game and I think you're going to win, I won't play it.
Really?
I'm that competitive. So if you're a pool shark and you want to go shoot pool, I won't do it.
Really? Even not for the competition fact?
No, because I'm going to lose.
You don't like to lose.
What's the point in losing? No answer.
Well, there is no point in losing. I hate to lose. Question for you. That's a good topic on losing. Kids nowadays are winners in everything.
I don't agree. It's like the teacher that comes to them and says, medal for everyone. Shouldn't be that way. You want the kids to be the best they can. And when everyone gets a medal, it teaches them just be normal. No, you don't want to be normal. You want to be as good as you can everything in life.
How do you think we get around that with our children today?
I don't know.
What do you teach your children if they lose?
Well, my son hasn't
get
lost
out of here.
Yet.
Really?
He's only fought twice, so.
Okay. What happens when he does lose? What's that conversation going to be like?
My theory is if you don't lose, you're not fighting the right people, so. To get better, you have to fight good people. So to get as good as you can, fight the people that are going to challenge you.
And it's okay to lose then.
I don't like to, but in my career, I think I've got 49-5. So that's 5 losses. I wish I never fought that fight.
Well, what did those 5 losses teach you?
I can't think of anything really teaching me.
Did it push you or drive you?
Probably made me work on holes in my game, but I'm not a big fan of losing.
Yeah, you don't even like talking about losing, do you?
Next topic, plead the fifth.
With your determination and the way you are about not losing, did that kind of play into after the train wreck and bringing you back to who you are, your rebirth?
I have to say it is because I don't like losing and anything, even if it's by a million-ton train. I just had to fight every day, and it's a battle I wish I never fought, but I was in the middle of it, so I had to fight as far as I could. I'm still learning and fighting today to be as normal as everyone, because everyone can tell I don't talk as well as you do, but you get paid to talk.
What was your hardest struggle, or maybe you're still struggling with it today in recovery?
Well, I wish I could talk like I used to, but with them putting holes in
your trachea,
I'm not going to ever talk the same, but I'm just trying to get as close to it and be more comfortable talking.
So there's more recovery that you can do?
There is, but with 5 years, I think they kind of say the most I'm going to get is within 5 years, but there's still more I can do. Polish up a little bit.
Matt, when we were at Adaptive Training Foundation, the gym, David Barrow's gym, and it's a lot of military, disabled military, and they're amazing athletes. That saying, God doesn't give you more than you can handle. You're still an inspiration to them.
I like to think God gives his toughest battles for his best soldiers, but this is a battle I'd like to win because in my whole life, I just wanted to be normal, if there is such a thing, because we're just a bunch of people that are all different, but it's nice being me sometimes, because I went to a fancy steakhouse in Texas here doing therapy, and I walk in with a friend, and they didn't have any tables for an hour and a half. I'm standing there, and it's been maybe 30 seconds. And a guy walks in, and he recognizes me. So he gets a picture, and a couple of people get pictures. And then the lady that said it's an hour and a half wait comes back up and says, I'm so sorry, but we just had a table open up. And it's no doubt because they knew I was popular, but it's fun but pathetic at the same time.
Do you want to be popular?
No, I want to be just a common people. Now, when a fan comes up, I'm very happy for the fan. It's fun for me to see who my fans are. Sometimes it's an old lady in the airport that wants me to kiss her on the cheek, and I'm happy to do stuff like that. But I like seeing who my fans are. But some fighters I know live for that getting recognized, but I'm not that guy. I just wanted to be common, but I appreciate my fans too.
Your fans mean a lot to you.
They do. Like I said before, they let me retire at age 39. What other person has retired at age 39?
Not me. Military kept me a little bit longer.
Who else on the show has retired at 39?
Nobody.
Come on. You're supposed to have a good memory. There's got to be more people than me.
No, dude. Scott, anybody on our show retire at 39? I don't think we've had anybody. Welcome to the retirement club.
You
old bastard.
Being retired sucks. I'm not a guy to watch TV all day, and that's why I have three bosses. I like staying busy.
And you're a farmer now.
I've always been a farmer.
So my father and my grandfather grew up on a farm upstate New York and had that farming life. What's farming life for you?
Well, now I cash from my ground, so I let the other guys gamble, but one question for you that's very important. Are you green or red?
Green or red, what's that mean?
Tractor color.
Oh, green. My grandfather was always green.
I was going to come out of retirement.
Green John Deere, that's what he has.
So you come out, I'm up, and green blood comes out.
Really? You love being on a tractor?
I do. Very relaxing for me.
What is farming like? I know you're leasing it out and letting other people do the land, but what is that kind of life nowadays?
It's good because if they need help running a tractor, I always help them, but that way I can get in a tractor, but I'm not living in a tractor.
That tractor is your happy place, huh?
Nowadays, when I first started, our 4020 had no windows or air conditioning, so now they have everything, but I'm just can't wait for them to come out with a TV and a microwave.
You'll never leave your tractor.
With the auto steer, they could do that.
They've come so far. Matt, what went through your mind when I asked you to write your last letter?
Well, I do my best thing in a night, so I would go to bed at night and just think about what the heck would my last letter say, because I really had no idea of the concept. It took me like 5 nights to write it all, but everything that I wrote down was through my mind. But I took a long time because I wanted to do as good as I could, because this is a serious program that I think God had me hit by the train to help others. So I'm hoping this can, maybe God had that train hit me for one of your listeners. So I hope I just touch one person.
Well, I'd love if you'd read your letter for us.
Always start your day with a good breakfast. Always laugh as much as you can. In my last letter to the man of earth, step up and be the man. So many guys nowadays don't open doors for the ladies or buy the food. Be old school and do those things. My belief is the woman gets to pick the restaurant and the man opens all the doors and pays. I don't care what society says. That's the man's job. Men, when you shake someone's hand, look at them in the eyes and give them a firm handshake. Also, people need to lay off drugs and alcohol. God wants us to be us, not a monster you've created. If I've got a headache, I won't take an Aspirin. God made each one of us perfect. Don't need to make yourself better. Drink more water so it is so bad for you. Be active and work out somehow, run, walk, or lift weights. Something I tell my kids all the time, Show me who you with. I'll tell you who you are. Spend time with the right people. God does exist. We talk to each other. So know that if I could come back after my death, I'd tell you more and you would believe.
And I didn't know this about you. I mean, I see it in your actions. This, again, the big-hearted guy, but gentlemen. You talk in your letter about being a gentleman. What does being a gentleman mean to you?
Well, it's my theory. When you come to a door and you're with a lady, you open the door and they go in and then you follow her. But I just always, I don't know where I get it. Probably being so close with my mom, I don't open the door for her. But I hate seeing a guy walk in front of a girl and not protecting her. I'm very protective. If I'm walking with a woman, I'll walk in the more dangerous spot. Could be against other people or could be against a road. If someone's going to get hit by a car, it's going to be me.
I was taught that too. If I'm walking a lady down the street, I'm the one who's supposed to be on the street side.
I totally agree.
Why is it so important to be a gentleman?
Because that's who you are. You look in the Bible, the men are always the men. And that's just my belief.
Is it important to be old school?
I think we could learn a lot from that.
Tell me what being old school is about.
Great morals. And even if I go a day and don't watch TV, that's probably good for me. And also, I hate watching a family in a restaurant and the two parents on the phone, not interacting with the kids. So I take my phone and set it away and just kind of live life without my phone. Because people get addicted to it and they don't interact with others the way we did back in the old days.
When your fans come up to greet you, do most of them give you a firm handshake and look you in the eyes?
I say 50-50 because younger people, they don't realize how to be a man.
In your letter too, you also talk about being healthy. Don't drink soda. You don't drink. You're still very fit. Are you still working out? Why is health so important to you?
Health's important because the more weight we'll put on, the harder our knees and ankles have to work. Your heart and lungs have to work. So being healthy is just going to make you live longer. And when you're not healthy, that's not what God wanted you to be.
Are you still working out like every day or?
Not every day, a couple times a week. I go to a gym and then also I got a buddy who's fine now, so we chain. And it's funny, you mentioned this earlier. Those moves will never leave my brain.
And they won't, so it's all in there, and it's staying. What are you trying to say with your letter?
Men be men.
Why is it so important for men to be men?
We live in a society today. You try and pick your gender, and that's, to me, that's totally wrong. God made you a man and made a woman a woman. End of discussion, in my eyes.
I also love the phrase that you said, you know, show me your friends and I'll show you what you're made of. What do you mean by that?
Just that, show me who you're with and I'll tell you who you are. You mold around who you are. So if you're with a good person, you're going to pick up good things.
Is it important to surround yourself with people better than you?
If possible.
Matt, you're out supporting charities, and that's kind of how I met you. Why is it so important to give back?
Charities need people to influence people. So I think I try and be as good an influence as I can. So if a charity, nonprofit needs some help, I want to be the guy to help them.
Were you as big into nonprofits and your charity work before your accident?
I would say not as big before, but definitely big now because I know the big man likes me so much.
What is one of your favorite things to do nowadays?
I love to be around good people. The good thing is most or all of my fans are good people, so I'm living the dream every day.
What is your definition of a good person?
No one's ever asked me that question before, which is kind of amazing. I've had everyone ask me questions, but want to give more than you get in every aspect.
So you're saying to give more than what you get in every aspect.
Would you agree? Or?
No, I totally agree. It was taught to me through the military. My mentors to always give back as freely as it was given to you.
That's why when it comes to coaching, I give away my knowledge because it's given to me.
When it's all said and done, how do you want Matt Hughes to be known as?
A good person, but I gotta have to say a competitor because I don't like to lose at anything.
Matt, I can't thank you enough for joining us today and taking us on your journey and in your rebirth. It's been a pleasure and an honor speaking with you today.
Thanks to all my fans out there. Fans, if you ever see me anywhere, just come up and we'll take a picture or whatever. I owe you some money in my book.
And that's why I love you. Thanks, Matt.
You're welcome.
Thank you to our guest, Matt Hughes, for reminding us to be kind to strangers and that a champion is not just a belt, but the heart of the person. And remember to surround yourself with great people and work hard for your dreams, because what's the point in losing? You can follow Matt on Instagram and other social at MattHughes9X. That's Matt Hughes, the number 9X. Please check out some amazing organizations that Matt supports, including Legacy Farmstead, who are impacting veterans, first responders, and their families daily at LegacyFarmstead.com. Also, Carry the Load, honoring America's heroes 365 days a year at CarryTheLoad.org. Additional fight audio, UFC. Last Letters is hosted by Jeremy Locke, produced by Scott Retberg. Original score by Michael J. Leslie. Special thank you to Legacy Farmstead, Carry the Load, Air Power Foundation, Cancer Blows, the Blinded American Veterans Foundation. Tune in every Tuesday for a new Last Letter. Thank you for listening.